Pittsburgh fans, welcome back to another episode of The Standard is the Standard. I'm Jeff Harbin, editor of BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, and Lance Williams will be joining me shortly. But while we wait, I decided to come on here a little bit early, answer some of your questions for those that are watching live on YouTube, and to do a little segment that I like to call the Homer segment. As many of you that have listened to our program for a length of time, and it is the Standard being the BTSE, BehindTheSteelCurtain.com flagship podcast, Lance and I have been doing this for a long time. You know that we both kind of fall into certain molds. And when I say certain molds, I mean I am typically more positive. Lance calls me. He is typically more negative, which we call him pain. And so because of that, I always, now it's turned into the Homer and the hater. All right, so Homer and hater. I'm the Homer. I'm the guy that's always positive. I'm the guy that looks at the glasses half full all the time. So I was like, you know what? I'll go on the show a little bit early. Lance is in traffic on his way home from work. And I was like, I'll go on a little, I'll do a Homer segment. And so my Homer segment this episode is simple. And not be excited about the 2020 season. That's what I don't understand. There's a lot of fans, there's a lot of sentiment out there, and there's a lot of negativity. And for people like me, my natural reaction is to combat negativity with positivity. And so there's all these people that say, oh my gosh, I want nothing to do with it. This team is going to stink. Their defense isn't going to be able to win them a championship. All this different stuff. I disagree. I think that this team is ripe for a very, very viable Super Bowl, a legitimate runner to Super Bowl. And I've talked openly about Ben Roethlisberger being the linchpin for all of this to function, and I still believe that. But ultimately, I think that Ben Roethlisberger is going to be back. Just today, Art Rooney II, team president, sat down with seemingly every media member in the city of Pittsburgh, whether that was, you know, Missy Matthews of Steelers.com, whether it was SNR, the Steelers Nation Radio, whether it was, he talked with everyone. And he said that Ben Roethlisberger's progress has been very, very good so far. That everything that they have seen from the doctors, from the reports, from the updates has been positive. So what do I hear? It's go time. Seven is going to be back. And that means it's time for the Steelers to go after number seven. And there's a lot of news that broke today. But fans need to be excited for this upcoming season. I know that the playoffs are still going on. I know that this Sunday is Championship Sunday. And I know that Steeler fans are going to be watching saying, when will they be back? They're going to be back. Book it. Mark the tape, as Lance always said. The Steelers will be in the playoffs next year, and they're going to make a run. Just saying it right now. Barring another season with these catastrophic injuries, which could happen, this team, oh yeah, it's going to be good. And with that, I bring in my co-host, Lance Williams. Lance, you gotta talk me down a little bit. I'm all fired up. I'm all positive tonight. You got to get me all negative, down in the dumps. Debbie Downer, bring us down, Lance.
What are you talking about? I was in the backstage, but I couldn't really hear. I heard you say something about seven being back next year.
Well, I said something that, you know, about today,
a medical report of some sort.
Well, Art Rooney II does this every year at the very end of, typically about this time, he sits down with, he has kind of like a roundtable discussion with local media, local journalists, local writers. So we're talking about people like Mark Cabali, Ed Bouchette, several people from the Tribune Review.
We got to get you there, Jeff. We got to get you there for that.
I would love to be there.
Let's work on that.
I will work on that for 20. There you go. And so he basically just answers a bunch of questions. Then he goes on. He did a show with Missy Matthews. He went on KDKA and did with Bob Pompiani. He's everywhere. He's basically giving you his summation of the 2019 and 2020 season. But here's the thing, is that he gives out so much information that a lot of times it's tough to digest it all at once. And so you have these writers that are just picking and choosing little things. But the one thing that stuck out to me was he said that although Roethlisberger still has a lot of hurdles to get over, everything they've seen so far, both from medical reports and Ben Roethlisberger's psyche, have been very, very positive. I hear that, and I'm thinking, it's go time. It's go time.
Riddle me this, Jeff, and I'm going to bring you down with this.
Here we go.
If it's, why can't we get some specifics, though? Like, I understand there that.
Okay, so. I mean, I think that
all that, you know what that does, though? That just fosters trepidation and fear. Like, you know, tell me something. Tell me something.
So let you answer this question then. What would be news that would have you be excited at this point? Because he still can't throw. They're talking at like beginning of February, around there, that he's going to be starting his actual rehab process. So what would make you feel comfy cozy when you go to bed tonight about Ben Roethlisberger's return? What would you want him to say?
Him shaved and on a treadmill.
So you don't want our Rooney to say anything. You want to see Ben Roethlisberger doing something.
Yes, exactly.
But Ben never does anything like that. The only time you see Ben in the off season, and even when he was healthy, is when he does like a celebrity golf tournament, or you know, he's never one that's going to show. He doesn't even do his own social media network. So whether it's Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, he has someone else do that. He's not one to put out workout videos. And I know there's a joke there about how there's no workouts to be videoed, but at the same time, he's just not that type of guy.
I'm just saying this. Come on, Ben Albert, man. You're 38. You had a season-ending arm surgery. Just lay our fears to rest by just showing us on the treadmill something. I mean, we need something. It's another disappointing season. They don't make the playoffs. And you look like Grizzly Adams combined with Fat Albert, hence Ben Albert. Come on, man. Just satiate the masses on a treadmill, in the facility, something. Like, I mean, but, you know, AR2 has, you know, we trust AR2. So in art, we trust. So, okay.
Do you trust Art Rooney? That may sound bad, but do you understand what I'm saying? Like, do you trust him? Do you think he's blowing smoke?
I'm a Northside guy.
I know you are.
I'm a Northside guy, so I'm a little biased. We're both Northside guys, so I trust my fellow Northsider. I don't think he's blowing smoke. I think they've been truthful and fairly honest as much as they can be as an ownership group. I don't think they've hidden much. They haven't told much, but they haven't hidden much. And I think I trust Art. I trust my owner. But I'd trust it more if I saw Ben on a treadmill.
Oh, my gosh, man. That, trust me, you're not going to see it. You're just going to hear reports, period.
What we saw? We saw an old picture of him, like, in September, holding Franco Harris and people saying, see, he's not overweight. We didn't see the December picture.
Well, you know, the funny thing is that on top of Art Rooney II speaking to the media and doing his usual routine of going through every single circle in Pittsburgh, not necessarily every circle, but you know what I mean. There was some news that happened today, Lance, and this is being recorded on Wednesday. Let's start with what happened first thing in the morning. And we knew that this was a possibility. It was at 8:15, Good Morning Football. The NFL Network was going to release their completed 2020 Centennial Pro Football Hall of Fame class. And Steeler fans were sitting there waiting with bated breath to hear if Donnie Shell was going to get in. He got in. So when you hear that Donnie Shell got in, Lance, what was your instant reaction?
It made my day. I mean, it made my day. I mean, you guys know I'm on the West Coast, and it made your day before it made my day because the running joke in our text messages, me, Dave, and Jeff text all the time is I don't break news. It's broken news by the time I say something to those two guys. But I was ecstatic, man. It's a long time overdue. I mean, him and Mel Blount back there. JT Thomas, him and Mel Blount. I mean, him and Mel Blount, man. I mean, I could just remember him hitting Earl Campbell. I mean, that's my memory of him absolutely demolishing Earl Campbell and knocking Earl Campbell out, I think, in the AFC Championship game. He hit Earl so hard, I thought he was going to get arrested. I mean, Donnie Shell was vicious, a vicious hitter and a ball hawk, retired with 51 interceptions, I believe. And at the time he retired, that was the most at the safety position. It was long overdue. But riddle me this, Jeff. That team now has 10 Hall of Famers. Those steel curtain teams from that decade, 10 Hall of Famers. That's absolutely ridiculous.
And they're still missing at least one that should be in, Mr. LC Greenwood.
I'm gonna give you another one that should be in as well. Mr. Bill Nunn should be in as well.
I'll give you that. Amen. Absolutely. Absolutely, he should be in. So this centennial class is getting a lot of criticism. And it's not because the players are getting in. It's more along the lines of the NFL is doing this special extended class for the 100th anniversary. I know that Bill Cowher, who obviously we found out that he got in on Sunday or Saturday, I'm sorry, Jimmy Johnson was Sunday. Bill Cowher is not going to complain about how he got into the Hall of Fame. It's just that he got in. But do you think from the perspective of the everyday fan that Troy Polamalu getting in as a first ballot guy, or even someone else that gets in on the regular ballot on the 2020 class, and then someone that gets in the 2020 centennial class will be viewed a little bit differently?
I don't think so. I think at the end of the day, when you put that gold jacket on, I mean, you're not getting there for cheap. I mean, it doesn't matter when you get in. Any guy that's in the Hall of Fame, when you look at his credentials, they deserve it. I mean, some guys, it just takes a little bit longer, but you can't cheat your way in there. There's no cream and clear to get the gold jacket. You've got to earn that. You got to be a grown A man to go out there and earn that. So I don't think it's going to diminish them at all. But I'll tell you something weird about my thoughts about Bill Cowher. After I saw, I can't remember which AFC championship I watched them lose. It might have been after the Super Bowl against the Cowboys, but it was after one of those numerous AFC championships that they lost. I honestly thought they would never win a championship with Bill Cowher. I saw him lose AFC championships. No, it was after the Patriots won. When they lost, when the Patriots scored two non-offensive touchdowns to beat them in the AFC Championship, and I believe the Steelers were favored by close to 14 points. When I watched that, I literally threw shit out of my house and said, we're never going to win another championship. I hate this dude. I said, I hate this dude. Like I never thought we were going to win a championship. I just had no confidence in the chin. I was tired of it. I was tired of the fire and brimstone, the spitting, all that. Because I was like, look, all this is going to end up with is an AFC championship loss. They're going to get out coached and they're going to lose another one. I'm glad he's in. But, man, I had no confidence that they were going to win a championship with him. And that's just me. I'm being honest. You know, you're a coward. I was listening to you guys talk on the show. You're a coward power guy.
Absolutely.
I wasn't. I was not. I was like, man, we keep losing these AFC championships. I don't like this dude. Well, I was hurt. I was hurt.
At least you remember and are honest enough to recall the angst towards Cowher. Because there was a lot of it. There was a lot of it. And there's a lot of people that say, you know, they long for Cowher. That wasn't always the mantra of the fan base. It was, we need to get this guy out of here.
Because he was a regular season guy. He was a guy that couldn't win the big game.
No, you're absolutely right. And everyone said, because who was his mentor? Marty Schottenheimer.
Marty Schottenheimer.
Same guy, you know, Marty Ball. Like, playing Marty Ball.
Like, you know, 60-minute men. The billboards on the north side outside 279, they get cracked. I mean, I traveled all the way to New England, watched them get embarrassed by Tom Brady. It was like -5. It was cold as could be, and they got their butt whooped. I was just like, I'm tired of this, man. I'm tired of this. Like, I was one of those guys. They're never going to get over the hump. So I was so glad when 7 came, they got over the hump. They got the 5th. Subsequently, they got the 6th. But it was well-deserving, though. Now that he got the Super Bowl, you look at his numbers. They won a bunch of division titles. He won a bunch of games. He has the outrageous stat of when they were ahead after halftime by 10 points, they were like 5,001. I mean, so, I mean, it's deserving, but man, I was really down on Cowher at times. I mean, that's why I was so giddy when they won a fifth. I was just massively intoxicated afterwards because I never thought it was going to happen.
You know, we talked about it on the show on Sunday about how Bill Cowher's tenure essentially set him up for a really good position to get into the Hall of Fame, because the last memory that people really have of Bill Cowher was winning Super Bowl 40. And yeah. You know, he didn't coach. He only coached one more year and then he retired. But Lance, I want to ask you, let's go down memory lane for a second. And I hate to do this because Bill Cowher is getting inducted into the Hall of Fame, but you're talking about the disappointments and I remember the disappointments. Well, out of all of his conference championship losses, which one hurts you the most? Was it 01, the one that you're talking about?
It was the Patriots one. Yes,
there's been more than one.
The Denver game was bad. The Denver game was bad.
Wasn't that, that was, I think that was 98, the Denver game.
I mean, he was so many of them. They all kind of mixed together in their own comical fashion. But the 01 was bad. They were better than that Patriot team. I mean, they gave up a touchdown, I think, on a blocked field goal attempt. I mean, I'm going to keep it 100. After that game, I had a massive migraine. I was probably in the bed for the next 14 hours suffering from a migraine. I was so pissed off that they lost to that Patriot team, which was probably the worst of the Patriots' six championship teams. I mean, they knocked out Drew Bledsoe and they lose to Brady. Or they knocked Brady out and then Bledsoe threw the touchdown pass. Let me get out of here. It's just bad. It was just really bad. That's the worst one.
For me, it's a toss-up between, and I don't want to steal our thunder because I know we're going to go over this on the Steelers preview in the after party tomorrow. It's a toss-up between 1994, losing to the Chargers at home, and 2004. Stan Humphries, and that was Neil O'Donnell with a fourth down call about the four-yard line, and he throws a pass that skips to Barry Foster in the pouring down rain at Three River Stadium. And I was heartbroken. I love that team, and I was all in on that season. That was like my first year that I was all in on a team. Now, granted, 95, they end up going to the Super Bowl, and they lose to the Cowboys in Super Bowl 30. But I don't think anything tops 2004 for me. You go 15-1 and you lose to the Patriots on your home turf. And there's that horrible interception that Ben threw to Rodney Harrison, where if he just gets some loft on that pass, Jeremy Tooman is just wide open.
I was sitting in the 600 section on that side of the field. You guys know my brother's a Patriot fan, big Pats fan. He's yelling, yes, yes.
Oh, that I'm yelling, worse. That
no,
worse.
No. Everybody in that section is like, OMG. We hope Rodney Harrison drops this. Because we're like, he's gone. And it was so bad because it was so cold in there. And they were getting their fannies waxed. And it's nothing like watching a team get waxed, your squad get waxed, and it's cold, and there's nothing you could do about it. Yeah, that was pretty bad. But 0-1 was bad because that 0-1 team wasn't good. That 0-4 team was really good. That might have been the best Patriots team. But the best Patriots team actually didn't win a championship. It's the one that lost to the Giants. But, 0-1 and 0-4 were bad.
Very good.
Horrible.
So not to get off the beaten path, but I mean, we talked about Donnie Shell. He was inducted into the Hall of Fame this morning. And this afternoon, the Steelers hired a new coach, quarterback's coach, Matt Canada. If that name sounds familiar, if you're someone that follows the University of Pittsburgh, he was the offensive coordinator at Pitt, I believe, in 2016. He had, they set school records for points scored. Before that, he was at NC State in 2016, I believe. And then he finished with 2018. He was at LSU. And then last year he didn't coach. He didn't coach at all. I read an article on Sports Illustrated kind of about him. He took the year off. He had offers. And he is known as, a guy that thinks outside the box. We'll put it that way.
What does that mean?
It means is they run a lot of motion. There's a lot of multiple back sets, jet sweeps, stuff like that. He is a creative offensive guru. Put it that way. Okay. Now, here's the question. To me, when I read all this stuff about what makes Matt Canada a candidate that most people were excited about just a few years ago as potential head coach, because he was the one that stood in at Maryland in an interim status as the head coach when the head coach was fired because the player died on his watch due to heat stroke. And obviously I live in Maryland, so I knew all about that issue. And so he actually did a great job with Maryland that year that he took over the reins of that program. But nothing's going to change unless Randy Feetner is willing to accept change, I guess is what I want everyone to know, you know, and it can be really intoxicating when you look at what Matt Canada can do in terms of how he sets up offense. And believe it or not, NFL teams have already started to duplicate what he did in college. A couple teams that have the most impressive and probably the most prolific is Andy Reid in Kansas City. Some of the, you see those crazy motion plays that they run in Kansas City with Tyreek Hill. That came from a Matt Canada system. So that's kind of what he brings to the table. But if Randy Feetner says, man, we're not doing it that way, he's just going to work with Mason Rudolph and Devlin Hodges.
I want to apologize. I don't know what quarterback coaches do. You know, so I want to apologize for that. I don't know what they do. You know, for you guys out there in corporate America, it's sort of like, you know, when they bring in a guy that's a charge of inclusion and diversity, and nobody knows what that person does. Like, they have this title, but you don't know what the guy is going to do, or the young or the woman's going to do, and how they're going to impact your organization. Who the hell knows what a quarterback coach does? Is he going to coach the quarterbacks? Teach them how to come, you know, teach them how to, you know, get a snap from center. I mean, what do they do? Like, I have no idea what they do. I'd love if somebody on the live chat could say, what do quarterbacks do? Because from what you described, he would be the offensive coordinator emeritus, sort of like he would coach the offensive coordinator. Yeah. Is he going to be like a consultant? He's self-scout. He's the kind of guy that oversees trends, tendencies.
As of right now, he is only labeled as a quarterback's coach. However, during AR2's media rounds today, he did say, I think it was to Mark Cavalli of The Athletic, that believe it or not, the Steelers have always had run and pass game coordinators. And what they do is they take ideas for that.
I didn't know that.
Well, but he said they've never made it official. So there were rumors that Mike Munchak was the run game coordinator. And then when he left, that's why the run game sucked, because he was the one.
Hope was the run game coordinator for years.
And you're right. That is true. So they've always had that, but we've never really known who actually has that official title. And so maybe, as along with the quarterback's coach, maybe he'll be the pass game coordinator, and he'll come in and say, hey, Randy, here are the concepts I'm thinking about this week. And Randy looks at him, says, thank you, I needed some kindling for my barbecue, and then goes on and runs his normal offense. I don't know. So
well, let me subtract 7 from that and say, does Ben want a quarterback coach? Is Ben going to listen to a quarterback coach, or is Ben his own quarterback coach?
Ben needs everyone needs a quarterback. I don't think that any player in the NFL right now is above having someone else give them some coaching. I'll put it that way. So that would include Ben Roethlisberger.
I think that sounds good in theory, and I agree with you. I mean, I'm wondering if, you know, how open is Ben going to be to coaching? I mean, he coaches Randy Feetner already, you know, so is he going to actually be open to being coached? I don't know. Well, this will be interesting. I know that it can't hurt, right? I don't think it can hurt.
It's going to help the young guys. If they really do believe Mason Rudolph is the potential future quarterback of the Steelers, it's going to help a lot, because it's someone that can work with him while Randy Feetner is off doing, you know, his other stuff with Ben Roethlisberger's or getting ready.
So give me the guy's name again. Matt Canada, you said?
Yep.
Okay, good. I didn't get that name right. I didn't get
pretty
that name
tough
wrong.
To get that one wrong.
See, I got it. See, I said I didn't get that name right, expecting that I was going to get it wrong, so I messed myself up. But maybe the first meeting goes, hey, Ben, you know, we want to introduce you to Matt Canada. Ben's like, hey, guy, work with those two dudes.
He might.
He might say that. So, yeah. You know, Ben's going to be in charge of that quarterback room, and I'm sure Ben will dictate, at least for his relationship with Matt Canada, he will dictate what he wants from the quarterback coach. And they'll trust Ben because Ben's a vet and all that stuff, and they'll let Ben probably frame that relationship. But the young guys, or I should say young guy, because I think Duck is going to turn into a Dash. Mm. Duck Dash instead of Door Dash, Duck Dash. I think he's going to turn into a Dash. So Mason, he could be Mason's guy.
He could be. And, you know, similar to when they brought in Terrell Austin, you look at him as potentially maybe a coordinator of the future. Now, I don't think that I haven't heard anything about Keith Butler stepping down or getting a new contract yet, but I think most people would agree that because he has coordinator experience, that Austin would be a shoe-in to take over if something were to change with Butler. You agree with that?
Yes. What was Austin's official title?
He is a secondary coach and a, what is it? It's a defensive secondary. It's almost like a consultant role, like you mentioned. I think he's also an assistant coach. So he's got a couple hats that he's wearing right now.
Because I know the story that I heard back in the day would be, you know, particularly with like Dick Hoke, is that a lot of times Dick Hoke was the running game coordinator, but he also sort of oversaw the game plan. So he would pick through the game plan after the game plan was formed and developed. And kind of the senior coaches would go through the game plan and come back to the coaches and say, nah, we can't do any of this stuff. You guys have got to put in some other stuff. So maybe Canada, Austin, I guess it can't hurt if you have more eyes, you know, looking at it. But I want to pause you, Jeff. It looks like somebody brought it to our attention. I think we have Antonio Brown's doppelganger in the live chat. Steelers respect 90. Is that Antonio Brown? Is that Mr. Third and Fifth? Is that Mr. Throw a Bag of Richards at his baby mama? Is it that guy? Is that him?
You sent me this text, dude. Are we really going to talk about this?
Only thing I want to say is, where does Antonio Brown get his gummy bears? Because he literally threw a bag of Richards gummy bears at his baby mama. Like, where do you shop to get gummy bear Richards? I don't know. That guy is off the charts.
I don't even know. I honestly, when I heard about what, like, it, you know, on Twitter, and you see there's rumblings of Antonio Brown's at it again. And so I go to Instagram, and I honestly couldn't even finish watching that video.
It was disturbing.
What he was saying with his kids, they're present. And I had to turn it off. I said, this is unbelievable. And when you have a website like Pro Football Talk and Mike Florio, who that guy will cover anything. Yes. And he's saying Antonio Brown fatigue, people don't care anymore. He might have played his last game in the NFL. When I'm seeing someone like Mike Florio write that, I'm thinking, wow, he really could be done.
Yeah, so something's going on there. And Ali Howard species 516, I did say a bag of Richards. You know, I have to edit myself.
Yeah, so yeah.
He threw a bag of assorted bag of Richards, all different types of flavors. And I mean, you know how we feel about Antonio Brown. He dislikes us highly because, you know, we're on his block list. But when they showed the bag, I just fell out laughing. It was bad. I mean,
yeah, I didn't even get that far.
I was like, wow, this guy is really bad. Mr. Third and Fifth, a.k.a. Mr. Gummy Richards. It's really bad.
It is bad, and we don't want to spend too much time talking about that and wasting time and oxygen on him, considering he's no longer a member of the Pittsburgh Steelers. But speaking of maybe no longer members of the Pittsburgh Steelers, one of the things we want to talk about, which is actually the title of this episode, and when we had developed this and talked about the rundown and things of that nature, we didn't, there was no breaking news that we were expecting to cover. So we apologize for taking this long to get to the headline of the episode, but we want to talk about players, not just players specifically that could be cap casualties, but let's talk about some numbers, and it all correlates together. So right now, correct me if I'm wrong, Lance, the Pittsburgh Steelers have about just over $4 million of salary cap space heading into 2020, correct?
No, it is a little bit different. That has been updated. So as of today, if you go to Over the Cap, they have $1.43 million in cap space. So
oh, good. Even better.
Even less. So their top 51 account for roughly $200 million. $100 million of that is allocated to the offense. $98 million of that is allocated to defense. Special teams is about 5.7. So their total cap liabilities are about $207 million, but you only count the top 51, and that's $200 million. And this is different for the Steelers. Until the last few years, most of the cap allocation was on the offensive side of football. When they were playing Le'Veon Bell, Mr. Butt Naked and Rob, and Antonio Brown, Mr. Gummy Richards. So now it's a little split half and half between offense and defense.
Right. And so let's talk about the biggest name on that list that the Steelers are going to want to keep. AR2 said it. Mike Tomlin said it. Bud Dupree, Bud the Stud, is a priority for the Steelers heading into the offseason. I have gone on record multiple times, multiple shows, and said that I feel that he will be back next season no matter what. Okay? In some way, shape, or form, whether it's the franchise tag or whether it's a long-term deal. Lance, do you agree or disagree with that statement before we move on?
I agree 100%. I think okay. The only way he will not be back will be if they tag him and he refuses to sign his tag.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only way.
No, I agree. I agree.
So he'll be property of the Steelers in the 2020-2021 season.
So once they place the exclusive rights franchise tag on Bud Dupree, they need to have that $16 million, I believe, is the number for outside linebacker pass rushers. $16 million has to be available at that time. So they're going to have to make moves if they want to have that as a viable option. Now, if they get him to sign a long-term deal, then that's different because you wouldn't necessarily need $16 million up front. And that can change. So if they franchise tag him, and then between the franchise tag and the deadline to get a deal done, if they get a deal done, that number can change. It might be closer to 17. It fluctuates. And let's also keep in mind that the salary cap is due to increase in 2020, which would give the Steelers a little bit more wiggle room. But the title of today's episode is based on cap casualties. So let's define a cap casualty. Lance, how would you define Webster's Dictionary version, someone that would be labeled a cap casualty?
I would think that it's a player that has played a critical role, a critical to vital role on the team that gets waived, you know, just simply as that. That would be a cap casualty. It's typically a player, you know, that you're surprised about when you hear on the news. You're like, oh, he got cut. That's a cap casualty. It's not the 48th roster spot guy that gets cut. It's not Skipper. Or it's not a special teams guy. It's not Jordan Dangerfield. It still is a guy typically with a name and a bit of pedigree. Although a couple of the names, and I'm sure we're going to jump into them, don't necessarily slot into that. But, you know, a cap casualty is essentially a prominent player that gets cut, or semi-prominent player that gets cut.
Well, it's also someone that, if we want to keep it as simple as possible, someone that their contract does not equate or equal their performance.
See, and I like that better.
Right.
I like
so that better. It's someone that it has an inflated price tag, and the Steelers view them as not worth that price tag. And this happens a lot in the NFL because a lot of teams like the Steelers will backload contracts. And so they do that because they know they can cut a player and save some money. So let's get down to the actual numbers. Lance, who are some players that when we kind of hashed this out a little bit prior to going on the air today, who are some players that you have listed as cap casualties?
So we talked about the $17 million that they may need to sign Bud Dupree, but there's also other things to do. You have to tender your restricted free agents. You might sign some free agents as well, and you have to sign your rookies. So they're going to need more than $17 million. They're probably going to need roughly about $35 million to get this all done. And this is assuming that they lose BJ Finney and they don't have to create more room for BJ Finney. But I'm going to go through the names and I'm going to give you the cap savings for each. So I've identified Mark Barron. The cap saving is $5.25 million. Vance McDonald, the cap savings is $5.672 million. Anthony Ciccolo is the absolute definition of a cap casualty. His is $5 million. Ramon Foster is $4 million. And it's ironic that Ciccolo's cap savings or cap number is more than Ramon Foster. Jordan Berry, I've identified as well, as cap savings is 1.8. Daniel McCullers, 1.5. And Tyson Alualu at 2.75 million. And that gives you roughly, I'm going to round it up, 26 million in cap space it would free up. So that would give you enough money for Bud Dupree. It may not give you enough money to do some of the other things that you need to do, namely re-sign Mike Hilton, re-sign Matt Filer, possibly offer a contract to BJ Finney, as well as sign your rookies.
The one player that we had listed that I am scratching my head over, and I'm not sure, everyone that you said except for this one player, I agree with. And it's not that I disagree with him being on the list. It's that I wonder about the position, and that's Mark Barron. So Mark Barron, you said, is like a $5 million cap savings, correct?
Correct.
Do you happen
to... Let me give it to you. Let me give you specific. It is $5.25 million of cap savings.
Okay. Do we know what Vince Williams' cap hit is by chance? I know...
Ironically, Vince Williams, if you were to cut him pre-June 1st, you would only get a cap savings of $968,000. That's why I left him off the list. Because okay, if you're going to cut one of these guys, you got to get some cap savings if you're going to try to create the number that you need to sign Dupree and do some of the other things. So that's why I left him off the list. Because I looked at his number and I was thinking like, well, maybe they could get... But you know, you're not going to save much. So there's no reason to cut Vince. And so especially if you cut Barron, you still need a veteran inside linebacker. Well,
that's what I'm thinking, because Bush. Do you think that Vince Williams and Devin Bush can be your full-time inside linebacker duo and the defense can be successful with that?
I think it can. I think you know what you're – but I think you have to coordinate around – Vince Williams's lack of coverage ability. I mean, you know that. Not that Barron was much better, so that might be something you address in the draft anyway. But I think you can scheme around it, but because you know what it is. So, yes, I think that's a cut that they will make, and I think that'll put Vitti Vitti Vici, Vince Williams, back in the starting lineup.
Right. I definitely respect your opinion here because I know you're a defensive guy. And I just kept on thinking as I looked at that list, because you sent me the screenshot of the players and the cap hits and the savings. And I kept on looking at Mark Barron thinking, okay, I don't think he was as bad as everyone thinks he was. But I know that's a big savings, but you can't cut a guy if you're going to need him. Like, that's key too. Like, Ramon Foster gets cut and you're saying, okay, they have options. You know, they could try to re-sign BJ Finney. I don't think that's going to be possible. They could move Filer to guard. They could try Chukwuma Okorafor for a guard. They have options. But an inside linebacker, that they don't have a ton of depth. Let's not forget also that Tyler Matakevich, if you view him as potential depth at the position, he's going to be an unrestricted free agent for the first time because he's coming off his rookie deal.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
and I was going to ask you, and I was going to go through the UFAs real quick. I mean, are the UFAs are Dupree and Finney, Artie Burns, Sean Davis. I think both of those guys we know aren't coming back. Latarius Walton, I don't think he's coming back. Javon Hargrave is another priority. What about Nick Vinette? What do you think about Nick Vinette? That's interesting because if you cut Vance and you don't bring back Nick Vinette, you suddenly only have one tight end on the roster.
Right.
You've got a rookie, very young player on the roster. What do you think they'll do, you know, in regards to Nick Vinette?
Vinette's going to have to be the right – he's going to – it's going to have to be the right price, period. They cannot afford to pay Nick Vinette more than a couple million dollars, especially in his first year of the deal. So if they want to sign him for a 2-year, $7.5 million contract, I'd be okay with that because they can move that money around and he'll be fine. He wouldn't hurt them that much in 2020. And I think he's a decent two-way player. I don't think he's great at blocking. I don't think he's great at pass catching, but he's good enough at both. He reminds me of like a Jesse James type. He doesn't have blazing speed. He's not one of those burners. I would try to bring him back. Personally, I would. Because I think that if you get rid of Vance and you bring back Nick Vinette, you could potentially get I said this on a show the other day. I think it was the burning question when I talked about team needs. And I said tight end was their biggest team need. And you can chime in on that in a second. I said keep Vinette, try to re-sign him, let Vance go. Try to find a Matt Spaith type veteran out there that is just known as a blocker, you know, a guy that comes in and blocks. So you don't have to rely on Zach Banner as your tight end eligible all the time. And then also try to find in the draft an athletic tight end, you know, and then you have a decent tight end core. So that.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, it is. But so you might disagree. Do you think tight end is their biggest team need going into the offseason?
I honestly think it's running back. I don't think they have a number one running back. And I think in their division, it's really apparent that they don't, because I don't think Connor is a number one back given his health. You know, you've got a division with Ingram, Chubb, and Mixon. I mean, so it's really apparent that, you know, when your leading rusher, who was as off injured as James Connor, leads your team in rushing with about 450 yards, to me, they need a running back. They need a premier back that can tote that thing. I think the tight end drop-off was more so due to Ben Roethlisberger not playing. It's going to be interesting what they do with that position because I could see them offering Nick Vinette very little money. Hopefully you get him back and them going out and drafting a guy. But they only have, what, 5 picks in this draft, so they're going to have to be very judicious when it comes to what they do. In terms of the restricted free agents, I mean, Mike Hilton and Matt Filer are the guys that are going to get tenders.
Yeah.
And Zach Banner. I think Zach Banner is going to get a tender as well.
Agreed.
So I think those are the three. I don't think Jordan Dangerfield will be offered a tender. LaVon Hooks won't be. And he's an exclusive rights free agent. You know, they pretty much own his rights. He can't really do much. I don't know if he'll be back. But they have some significant cap issues. And, you know, just to tease the show Friday, I'm going to be bringing on a special guest and we're going to jump into some more nitty gritty cap stuff. Because the question I really want to ask Ian Whetstone, my salary cap guru, why are they in such a bad predicament? I mean, they don't even have the Antonio Brown contract on the books again. And so why are they at a point where, you know, they only have 1.4 million in space? And I know it's got to be a little more intricate than just it's that old guy, number 7, eating up all the cap. So we're going to dig into some of that.
Well, a lot of it is that old guy number 70 into the cap. But hey, now
eating up cap,
I have a question Skittles. For you. I have a question. You said running back was the biggest team need. And I had this is more of a hypothetical than it is a realistic question. I just want to know your thoughts on it. And I sent you this text earlier today. If somehow, some way the Steelers had an opportunity to bring back Le'Veon Bell, because it's pretty clear that the New York Jets are not that enthusiastic about having him there. If you can bring him back, if it fits, blah, blah, all the numbers, blah, 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 all that stuff. Would you do it? Would you bring back Le'Veon Bell if you had the opportunity? You know, I'm talking about the price tag and all that stuff. Would you do it?
Absolutely. 1,000%. He would no longer be Mr. Butt Naked and Robbed. He would once again be Mr. Le'Veon Bell. Absolutely. Le'Veon does wonders for their offense, especially bringing back a guy who we have to rely on the owner to say he's really positive about, he can throw the football. So, yeah, I mean, bringing back a premier back like Mr. Third and Fifth, I think would work out right. Because I don't think anyone disliked Mr. Third and, you know, not Mr. Third, Mr. Butt Naked and Robbed, excuse me. Yeah. I don't think anybody disliked him. I don't think there were personality issues. It was more of a money thing. I think people kind of grew tired of Le'Veon Bell kind of stutter stepping and I'm going to come back. No, I'm not. And I don't think he had the issues that AB had with, you know, with Ben Roethlisberger, Mr. Third and Fifth, and their issues. So I think Le'Veon Bell could be reabsorbed back into the Steeler locker room. I think no problem.
The one thing that really opened my eyes was something that you said actually this past season about the offensive line. Yeah, it was on
your eyes.
Don't get too egotistical. Misty. Here.
I'm feeling misty.
I can see his head. His head grew three sizes that day. you had said it. I think it was I said it about the offensive line. You said this offensive line was built to block for number seven and Le'Veon Bell. And ever since you said that, because I listen to all of our shows, when I watch the team, I'm like, hot damn, he is right. When you watch the, when you watch them block, it almost seems like they're still expecting Le'Veon Bell back there to hesitate, pick his spot, and then take. He knows where to go. He's going to take the best course of action when he sees that sliver of daylight. Whereas everyone that they have now in their running back stable, whether it's Benny Snell Jr. or James Conner, it is a downhill. Where's the hole? It's got to be there. And if it's there, we're looking at a nice run, a big gain. But if it's not there, it's like a 2 yards in a cloud of dust. And so it's tough if you've built the offensive line around a player that's not there anymore. And it's even worse when you've built it around two players and neither of them were there anymore. And that equates to your 2019 offense.
Right, right. You get exposed. Like, think of the Tennessee Titans. When you look at, you know, what they were doing to the Baltimore Ravens. And I disagree. I don't think a Ravens loss is like a Steeler victory. I mean, a Steeler victory is a Steeler victory. I'd rather be playing in the playoffs.
Well, but hold on. Cheering for them. Okay. Hold on a second. I think this has a lot to do with a lot of different things. Does a Patriots loss almost feel like a Steelers win to you?
Almost, yes.
Because your brother is a huge freaking Patriots fan.
Yes.
We live in Maryland, and we have to deal with these idiots here. And so that's why for us, this is like a party.
Okay, I get it. Okay, so you bring up a good point. I mean, I was massacring my brother for at least a day and a half because I call my brother famously, he's a sore winner. You know, he's a sore winner. Like, he's the guy that wins and just rubs it in you. Like, he's a sore winner. And he's just a sore winner. So I get what you're saying about that with the Ravens and how it felt like a victory.
Well, go ahead and talk about the Ravens game, because you were in the live chat that day and you were talking about sometimes teams just lose. The Titans weren't necessarily better. I'll give you the platform. You can go ahead and say whatever you want about
it. Yeah, that. I mean, I think in that game, you know, there were some critical mistakes they made. They didn't convert some fourth and ones. I thought Lamar did not play his best game, but I thought it was a game in which the Titans beat them. I think the Titans had the better plan. They beat them up. They were more physical. I thought Ryan Tannehill played a solid game. Hit some big plays in the passing game. And I thought they were better prepared and they were the better team that day. You know, if they played seven times, I'd say the Ravens would beat them five times. But that day, they were better. And then you got the hammer and Derrick Henry that just bludgeoned them to death. So when they got up, I mean, and I think everybody knew it about the Ravens. The question was, if you get up on the Ravens, will their offense get them back into it? I mean, they massacred people in the first quarter almost every game. They got up on the Steelers early in the game. The Steelers could never really get back into it and really take a stranglehold of that game. But the question is, you know, are you shootout proof? If you get down, can you come back and put on a offensive performance for the ages like the Kansas City Chiefs? And I don't think the Ravens are built that way. And so, you know, kudos to the Tennessee Titans. I'd like to give all the credit to the winner, not minimize what the winner does. So, you know, kudos to the Titans. They went up there and punched the bully in the mouth and bye-bye Ravens. It's beautiful.
It's amazing. Brian Anthony Davis said this on his Steelers Hangover show. He goes, it's funny. He says, I can hear something every time Derrick Henry carries the football, and it's cha-ching, cha-ching, because he's set to be a free agent. And you know what?
Cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-ching.
He is going to get paid big time. So let's.
And I would not give him. I would give him two wooden nickels. I can't pay it back with that many hits.
Hey, you don't compare him to Le'Veon Bell. You know who you compare him to? Todd Gurley.
Yeah.
Bigger
Todd
back.
Gurley, I think, killed the running back market. Gurley's contract.
Oh, yeah.
They put a pin. You just can't pay those guys.
Let's do some predictions for the championship weekend. Okay, let's go NFC first. The Green Bay Packers travel to the San Francisco 49ers. I'm not sure of the spread or anything like that, but what are your thoughts on that game and who do you think is going to win?
Well, first of all, given that my wife is a fan of the San Francisco 49ers.
That's right, I forgot about
that. She is from San Francisco. She's from the Fillmore, the Western Addition. Grew up there, went to grammar school, middle school, high school. She's from the city. The Niners are going to win. Bang, bang, Niner gang, as they call them in the Bay Area. Bang, bang, Niner gang. They can't, until they can block the Niners front, I got to pick the Niners. The Niners front absolutely beat that offensive line to shreds. And until they can block them, you got to go with a team. If you can't block that front in the trenches, you can't beat the Niners. They will absolutely demolish you. I think it's going to be tighter. I don't know how much they trust Jimmy G, because they took the air completely out of the ball in that game. When Jimmy G threw that interception to Kendricks, they said, wait a minute, pause, freeze. That's where they ran the ball 17 straight times. It felt like early Ben Roethlisberger in the first year and in the playoffs. So I'm going with Bang Bang Niner gang in that game to beat my fellow alum from Cal, the Golden Bear, Aaron Rodgers.
If you like old school football, you should watch the San Francisco 49ers play. They play hard-nosed defense. I like the way they play defense, and they run the football, and they do it in a really unique way. It's not your eye formation, run it down your throat. They've got multiple backs. It's a good. I like the 49ers to win at home. They seem to be more exciting, but at this point in time, I'm kind of rooting for the game that'll have more juice. And it's all because of who I think is going to win on the AFC side, which is when the Tennessee Titans travel to Arrowhead to play the Kansas City Chiefs. Lance, what are your thoughts on that one?
Kansas City is going to put it on the Titans.
We said that about the Patriots and the Ravens, though, too.
And here's the thing. In Kansas City, all that speed, that offense, if they can block Tennessee's front, they're going to put up points. I mean, this is a team. Riddle me this, Jeff. When's the last time, first of all, I don't think it's ever happened in the playoffs, where a team has been down 20-plus points and won by 20 points?
I don't know the answer to that question, but I can't fathom that they won by 20. That's the key. That people have come down.
By 20.
Teams have come back from 20, but they have not turned that into a 20-point victory.
Like, if you give up 31 and you score 51, I have to vote for that team.
Yeah.
I mean, that's nutso. I mean, you have that much firepower that you can put up 50. You can give up 31 and win by 20. That's nuts. So I'm going with Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes is what quarterbacks will look like moving forward for the next 10 to 15 years. That he is the prototype that you want at the quarterback position. Mobile, big arm, cut the wind, throw at all these different arm angles. He's the guy that offensive coordinators pray for. He is the guy. So I'm going with Kansas City.
Listen to this crazy statistic. It's been 17 years since there has been an AFC championship game that has not had Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, or Peyton Manning involved.
Peyton Manning. Yep.
17 years. Goes all the way back to 2000 and 2001, I guess, was the last time.
Who's the AFC quarterback? I know you know. The other AFC quarterback that was in an AFC championship game on the AFC side.
Well, there's been a bunch. It's just that either Brady, Manning, or Roethlisberger had to have some way in that game. So what is your question?
Well, like the winner, like it's Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco is the other guy that won an AFC championship because it's Flacco, Ben, Peyton Manning, and Tom Brady.
Right. Yeah. So
Brady having won, what, like 8 or 9?
Too many.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
So for me, though, I think that this is Patrick Mahomes' time, and it's because I won a Super Bowl. It's going to have more juice, and that means that Kansas City, San Francisco, or let's be honest, even Kansas City and Green Bay would still be exciting. The Tennessee Titans want to win. Tannehill is going to have to do it, period. You got Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry got you there, but Tannehill's going to have to throw for – he hadn't even thrown for 100 yards yet this playoff, so he's going to have to perform.
Yeah, and that's odd because going into the playoffs, Tannehill played really good football. Like over the last 10 games, Tannehill played really good football. Yeah. So it's weird. Like Tannehill got them there, but Derrick Henry is getting them to the Super Bowl. But Tannehill – you know, has played really good football. And they have an interesting dilemma because him and Derrick Henry are both unrestricted free agents. So
you'll see.
And I would suspect they're going to give the contract to Tannehill, not the running back.
And it could be a mistake. All right, we got a couple super chats here. Crazy Chris, $4.99 in the tip jar. We appreciate the donation. He says, is it better to have 7, meaning Ben Roethlisberger, get hurt early in the season than to end on an injury in the late in the season that possibly lingers into the beginning of next season? Absolutely. The fact that he was injured in the midway point of week 2 allows him to get the surgery, start the rehab process. You have to think, if he were to have played the majority of the season, let's say he gets hurt in week 14, we're not talking about Roethlisberger playing again in 2020 at the earliest until
his career be over.
Well, at least 2020 is over in terms of his season. And so, yes, that is absolutely very much a big deal, you know.
To that point, I'm going to say this. Let's say Ben Roethlisberger plays the season, gets hurt, you know, week 16, they go to the playoffs. I think if he had played a majority of the season, they go to the playoffs, considering how that defense evolved. If he gets hurt week 16, week 17, and doesn't play the 2021 season, his career, I think, would effectively be over. I think they would actually waive him because he would be in the last year of his contract, and I think he would waive him. That would be – you would have seen your last Ben Roethlisberger game had he got hurt in week 16, week 17 with the same injury. That would have been his last game, in my opinion. I lie. It would have been kind of reminiscent of Terry Bradshaw. I don't know what game it was when Terry got hurt, but Terry came in, hurt his arm again, and he never played for the Steelers again.
It was against the Jets. I know that. So.
Yeah, it was. I can't remember at what point. I remember. I think it was a Monday Night Football game. He came back, and that was it. He never played again. Yeah. So I think the Steelers are fortunate that he got hurt in week 2. I think it was week 2.
Your boy, fellow hater Grayson Brown, chimes in with $4.99. The tip jar says, "Yo, I hate the 49ers." He's just like you. They're arrogant. Green Bay finds a way to win. Kansas City is a finesse football team. Tennessee wins. Manhandle them physically. It's a pick'em game. I'm not sure I'm going to say a pick'em game. And let's not forget, though, you want to say San Fran is arrogant. That's fine. You can. You have every right. That's your opinion. But let's not forget that, in my opinion, Aaron Rodgers is one of the most arrogant and conceited players in the National
League. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
From a Cal alum, so he's
Richard. Oh, he's an absolute Richard. Oh, yes. Butte, Butte JC or whatever used to say Butte, whatever. He's a Richard.
When he used to do the championship belt thing, oh my gosh, I wanted to punch him square in the face. I mean, I literally remember in the Super Bowl 45 when he would do that and they beat the Steelers, and I was so I still don't like him and them because of that. So
he's a Richard. He's absolutely a Richard. Kansas City is a finesse team, but they're explosive. I like any team that can score 51 on somebody in the playoffs.
Yeah. So, all right, Lance, this is your chance. It's the end of the show. Do you have anything to say to the fine folks in the live chat and listening in audio?
Bang, bang, Niner gang. No, I mean, I don't know. That's just silly. You know, hey, props to everybody out there that's sticking with us. I know it's the off season or the business season, as me and Jeff like to say, but we're going to keep giving you shows, man. We're going to keep giving you content. We're going to keep talking about interesting stuff. I got the show coming up on Friday where we're going to dig into the salary cap. And we're going to keep giving you Steeler content. So stick with us. It's a labor of love, and we appreciate every one of you guys that's in the live chat and everybody that's giving us the super chats. And remember to like the shows.
Absolutely. And I do want to mention this, and I didn't want to do this at the very end. I totally forgot at the beginning. If you're someone that's listening to all our shows, whether it's an audio platform on YouTube, whatever, and you're thinking of a topic that you would like to see us cover in the off season, whether it's salary cap specific, whether it is NFL draft, we are going to do NFL draft shows. We're just waiting for the NFL season to end. So yes, we are going to do that. But go ahead and you can email me. If you go to behindthesteelcurtain.com, I write multiple articles a day. Find my name underneath an article, click on it. My email address is there. Or Dave Schofield, you can email him as well. And we will be glad to talk about some of these topics in the offseason. There's a lot of shows to cover. And sometimes we want to get input from you as to what you would like to hear. That doesn't mean that it's a guarantee that we do a complete episode on it, but we might make it a topic that we discuss. And as Lance says, make sure you like all our videos. If you're watching live on YouTube, go on, subscribe to the channel, hit that bell, make sure you set up your notifications however you like. And then
I'm laughing at somebody, Jeff. What's that? I'm sorry,
what's that?
I'm laughing at Jesse George, Steelers trade Big Ben and TJ Watt for Patrick Mahomes. That's the kind of things fans think they will do, and it's not gonna ride Ben to the wheels all off. That's hilarious. Here's the funny thing. Kansas City wouldn't give you Mahomes for Big Ben and TJ Watt. No. They wouldn't give away Patrick Mahomes for anything.
Yeah. So I agree 100%. That is pretty funny when you think about it. So if you didn't know that we had a YouTube channel, go to youtube.com, search BTSE Steelers Radio, subscribe, as I mentioned. And if you listen in audio platform, whether it's Spotify, follow the show on Spotify. If it's iTunes, subscribe, Google Play. Give us a good review. Give us a good rating. We appreciate all that. It all helps in the grand algorithms that are audio platforms and YouTube. So check us out. And as Lance always says, why don't you send us out?
Before I send us out, Jeff.
Yes.
And thanks for the tee. Set me up in the tee box for that. 98-671X brought up an interesting thing. Kansas City actually scored 50 points in three quarters.
Yeah, you're right.
I was like, wow, that's... Yeah, that's absolutely ridiculous. But with that, we're going to conclude the show. And as always, tune in, tell a friend, and subscribe. And again, congratulations to Coach Cower and to Donnie Shale for their inductions into the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Absolutely. We'll see you next week on another episode of The Standard is a